Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
Amazing grace.
Continuing our journey through the book of Acts, we've come to chapter 16, verses 35 and following, where we have an account of how the Apostle Paul used his citizenship privileges in the interest of Christ's kingdom. I don't need to tell you that this is a controversial area for many Christians, and I must say that I think this is one of those areas that we can become imbalanced in either direction. Like so many areas of truth in the Word of God, there is a ditch on either side of the road of truth. And so there is a proper exercise of citizenship privileges, rights, responsibilities, and then there's a ditch on either side of the road. On one side of the road, the ditch of ignoring these opportunities and not using them at all for the kingdom of Christ. And on the other side of the road, acting as if political activity is more important than gospel involvement. And it is not. It absolutely is not. And the Apostle Paul is a good example of how these things should be viewed. It's clear that in his life, his commitment to the gospel, to the preaching of the gospel, to the spread of the gospel, to directing his energies almost entirely for the work of the gospel was his priority. But along the way, when opportunity arose and occasion required, he did not hesitate for a moment to use his Roman citizenship privileges in the interest of Christ's kingdom. He did not ignore them. He did not neglect them. He did not believe that there was anything ungodly, unchristian, about using these privileges that had been given to him by God. On the contrary, he used them fully and effectively. And I think he shows the way for how Christians in America today should behave in regard to political issues. So that's where we are, and that's where we're going a little bit further in this discussion today. Thank you for joining me on this Sunday, February 17, and many thanks to those whose financial gifts enable us to continue teaching God's Word on this station. Well, all of this follows, as you recall, the Philippian jail incident, where Paul and Silas were hauled before the magistrates, given a very hasty trial, beaten, incarcerated, put in stocks, and there they were in jail. And God, as you know, miraculously released them by sending an earthquake which did no damage, but which released the prisoners, and yet by the restraining hand of God, none of the prisoners fled. Quite a remarkable thing. And as you know, before that incident is over, the jailer and his household become followers of Jesus Christ. Paul used that opportunity as a way to preach the gospel. That was always first and foremost in his mind. And so he took full advantage of that outstanding and that astounding, I guess is a better way of saying it, incident to preach the gospel to the Philippian jailer and his household, to whom he had been given this wonderful opportunity, and they became followers of Jesus Christ. Now, the next day arrives, and the political leaders are feeling a bit, what should I say, embarrassed, sheepish, nervous, They're having second thoughts about what they've done. They acted rather hastily. They apparently catered to the interests of the businessmen who had lost their income when the slave-possessed damsel had the demon cast out of her, and did some things that they really should not have done. And so they attempted to cover it all up. They basically sent word to the jailer to just let Paul and Silas go. Just let them go. Here's what it says in verse 35. And when it was day, the magistrate sent the officers, saying, "Let these men go." So the keeper of the prison reported these words to Paul, saying, "The magistrates have sent to let you go. Now therefore depart and go in peace." Just leave. Just pretend like nothing ever happened. Just ignore that your rights have been abused, that you've been trampled on by civil authorities, that they have done things in an illegal way. These who are the keepers of the law have done things in an illegal way. Just ignore all of that. Be thankful that they have now decided to let you go, and just slip away quietly. Now, what would you have done in that situation? There's no question that a lot of Christians would think that the right thing to do would be to just slip away quietly. Don't make a scene. Don't make a stir. Just be glad that you've been released and leave, and don't do anything more. But that's not the way Paul viewed it. And this is where he began to exercise his political rights. We read in verse 37, "But Paul said to them, 'They have beaten us openly, uncondemned Romans, and have thrown us into prison. And now do they put us out secretly? No, indeed. Let them come themselves and get us out.' And the officers told these words to the magistrates, and they were afraid when they heard that they were Romans. Then they came and pleaded with them and brought them out and asked them to depart from the city. So they went out of the prison and entered the house of Lydia, and when they had seen the brethren, they encouraged them and departed." So here is an account of the exercise of political rights. And what does Paul do? Well, number one, we see him exercising the right of speech. Will Paul meekly accept this political injustice? Will he say that his citizenship is in heaven and he has no interest in political affairs here upon the earth? No, not at all. He speaks up. He challenges the wrong activities of the authorities. He charges them with an illegal beating, a public beating without trial, and illegal imprisonment without a trial. All of these things are either stated or implied in what Paul said. He is confronting the authorities with their violation of the law. So the right of speech, the rights of citizenship. He makes it very clear that he is a Roman citizenship, or is a Roman citizen. He enjoys Roman citizenship, which, as I already explained to you, was enjoyed only by a minority of people in the Roman Empire. Unlike America today, where everybody who's born in America is an American citizen, and then those who come here from other countries legally and go through the process can become American citizens. So that we have, most people have American citizenship rights, and only a minority of people don't. And what is actually astounding to me is that there are many in our society today who feel that we should give the same rights to people who are not citizens and who are here illegally as are given to American citizens. They think they should be treated exactly the same way. I do not understand that kind of thinking. There, and this is just a political opinion being inserted at this point, but if we don't make a distinction between legal and illegal, then pretty soon we don't have an orderly society. What does the law mean? What do laws mean if we just ignore them? What do laws mean if we only obey the ones that we like? What do laws mean if we only obey the ones that we agree with? If we act as if there are no laws, there are no regulations, there is no distinction between legal citizens and illegal aliens, then there is no exercise of law. And when you start ignoring law and violating law and insisting that it ought to be violated, then where does that end? If you insist that law officers must treat illegal aliens as if they were American citizens and give them exactly the same rights, even though they don't legally enjoy those rights, and in fact, because they are here illegally, ought to be apprehended and deported. Really? They're here illegally. I didn't mean to go down this road. And I'm not angry at these people. I sympathize with them in many ways. They have come here illegally. They've broken the law, but they're good people for the most part. I mean, they're people. All people are sinners, and you have all different kinds and levels of sin. And some here, of course, are taking advantage of drug traffic and prostitution and various things. But the majority of illegal immigrants that I have had any interaction with are good, hardworking people who just want an opportunity to earn some money and, in many cases, to send it back to their family in the country from which they came. They're looking for economic opportunity that they don't have in their country, but they have broken the law. There are legal and illegal ways to do this. You say, well, it's too hard to do it legally, so I'll do it illegally, all right? That's a decision you made. That's a chance you take. Then don't be indignant if, when you get caught, you're treated as if you are illegal. And don't other people be indignant, too, but they're human beings with, in many cases, have established new relationships in this country, have wives and children in this country. I know. It's a sad thing, but there are consequences for breaking the law. There are consequences for breaking the law. If we remove all consequences for breaking the law, then pretty soon we have a lawless society. If everyone is encouraged to break whatever laws they don't agree with and are supported in that by others who also don't agree with the laws, then we end up with a lawless society. If there are laws with which you do not agree, then there are proper ways for you to work at changing the law. It's as simple as that. There is the political process. There is the legislative process. There is sometimes a judicial process, which it seems to me has in many cases overstepped its bounds, but at least that's a legal way to approach things. But don't try to add more illegality on top of illegality. We have some things like that going on in our area, and I read in the paper about some mother who was caught because she used an invalid Social Security card as identification in a business, and the business person who saw the card summoned a policeman who was standing right there. And she was taken into custody, and the howl of protest that went up. And one of the statements that was made, as reported by the newspaper, said she didn't do anything wrong. In other words, she wasn't robbing a store. She wasn't involved in an illegal transaction when this happened. All she did was produce a counterfeit Social Security card. That's all she did. She didn't do anything wrong, said the person who was representing those who were coming to her defense and did not want her to be treated as a violator of the law. She didn't do anything wrong? Well, excuse me, I know of at least two things she did wrong. She entered the country illegally. That's wrong. That's a crime. I don't know enough about the law to know what category of crime it is, whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony, but it's a crime. It's probably a felony, but at least it's a misdemeanor. It's a crime. It's a breaking of the law. And what probably in terms of repercussions is even more serious, she used a counterfeit Social Security card. She has no Social Security card. She can't get one because she's not legal. So she has obtained a counterfeit one, which I understand it's possible to secure counterfeit documents. People are in the business of supplying these and can make them look very real. And there's a market for that. And because there is a market for it, there are people who are willing to take a risk in order to make some money to supply the market. And so she had a counterfeit Social Security card, which means she's using somebody's Social Security number at times, which means that that person's Social Security number is in jeopardy and their record is in jeopardy. There's all kinds of repercussions on that. And this person says she didn't do anything wrong. Well, excuse me, she did two things wrong that I know just by a casual reading of the newspaper, and who knows how many other things she has done wrong if you could trace it back. I do feel very sorry for her. She does, I understand, have a child here in America, maybe one born in America. I think born in America, an American citizen who is in the school system and doing well. This is a very sad situation, but breaking the law has consequences. It better have consequences. It's supposed to have consequences. If breaking the law has no consequences, then you end up with a lawless society. That's what happens. You end up with a lawless society. Okay, you think this person should be allowed to break the law in the areas that you think that you don't agree with the law. Okay, then why should somebody else be compelled to obey the law when it comes to what? Stealing? And, you know, even in that area, people seem to have kind of a very flexible standard of evaluation when it comes to this. Depends on who you steal from. If you steal from a rich guy who has more than he needs, then that's not really such a bad thing. That's a very minor infraction, and you didn't do anything wrong, you know, a Robin Hood situation. You steal from a rich guy who doesn't need all that money in order to take care of a need of somebody who's in poverty. So that becomes completely acceptable. That's completely justified in the minds of some people. Whereas if you steal from somebody else who's poor, you know, that's really bad. Shouldn't do that. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Is this what it's come to in America? I'm afraid it has. I'm afraid that's what it's come to. This relativism that we began teaching in the schools decades ago has caught up with us, and here's where we are. If there are no absolutes, if everything is relative, it all depends upon the situation, then pretty soon you have no law. So, stealing is all right. Is rape all right? Well, most people would say no. That's not all right. But by what standard? It's obviously against the law. But by what standard? Well, you've harmed another person. Well, the lady who was using somebody else's Social Security number harmed another person, but that's not really the proper criterion. That does make it worse, but the proper criterion is there a law? Has it been violated? Well, it has, but I don't like the law. Then work to change it. If it's a bad law, you ought to be able to persuade enough people that it's a bad law to get it changed legally. There are legal ways to do this. But if you can't change it legally, then don't violate it and don't encourage other people to violate it. But that's exactly what's going on. Everything's relative. So every person becomes the law in his own eyes. I decide when stealing's right and when it's wrong. I decide when using counterfeit identification is right or when it's wrong. I decide when entering a country illegally is right and when it's wrong. I decide, I suppose here we go, when murder is right and when it's wrong. Well, it really boils down to that. Murder children in the public school, and there's a public outcry. That is wrong, wrong, wrong. Terribly wrong. Terribly wrong. But murder an unborn child in the womb. And that's right. However, and here I must say something about this. That is legal. I consider that to be an immoral law, but it is legal. Therefore, I will work to change that law, but I'm not going to use illegal means in order to oppose it. I will use legal means. I decry it. I think it is horrific. I think it will bring down God's judgment upon our nation. I think it already has. But it is legal. Wrong, but legal. Some things are wrong, but legal, just like slavery was before the Civil War. That was justified, and that was legal. It was legal. And that's why we fought a Civil War. Now, some people will question that, and I'm not going to get into all of that. Obviously, there were other factors. That was not the only factor. But I've been reading the pros and cons and the back and forths on the war between the states for many, many years, and I've read what people have said who believe that slavery was not really the issue, that that was just the pretext, but other things were the real issue, and I remain unconvinced. I think the main issue was slavery. I think there were other issues as well, but I think the main issue was slavery, and a war was fought over that because there were people who were defending slavery, which was legal, and refused to make it otherwise, to let it become illegal. And so a war was fought. Now, was that the right thing to do? I don't know. I'm not defending the war between the states. I'm not certain that having a war was the right thing to do at all. I tend to think not. I rather strongly think not. I don't think that was the right way. I think it should have been addressed legislatively. But there are a lot of people who wouldn't stand for that. That is totally immoral. That is totally wrong. The idea of legalizing slavery and allowing one human being to own another human being, that is completely wrong. It should never be tolerated. Yes, I agree. I don't think it should be tolerated. And it was not. And it was so intolerable that it divided our country, and before the war was over, how many Americans died to secure the right of every person to be free? A huge number. I've forgotten how many, but it was a horrific number. It tore our nation apart. It killed our young people, our fathers, our husbands. It devastated our nation in the way that nothing else has ever done, all to secure the legal rights for every person to be free, not to be owned by another person. That's what it took to change that legal immorality. I wonder what it will take to change the legal immorality of abortion. Will that ever be changed? Not in today's climate. There's too much sin, too much promiscuity, too much worshiping the god of money, materialism, too many other things that are involved in today's climate to make such an immoral act illegal, as it surely ought to be. So it is legal, immoral, but legal. And there are a lot of other things that are immoral, but legal. Most of the laws that have pertained to what is generally considered to be personal and private morality have been struck from the books. No longer are there laws against adultery. No longer now, in most places, are there laws against homosexual activity, crimes against nature, as they are often called, though there still are crimes against nature laws on most of the books. But again, very selective enforcement. The laws may be on the books, but we choose not to enforce them. And here we go, lawless society. If the laws are wrong, then change them. If not, then enforce them. If a law is a law, it ought to be enforced. If it is not enforced, then again, who decides what laws ought to be enforced and which ones shouldn't? We end up, you've never spent any time, any significant time, I'm afraid, in a third world country where the nation, though it has laws, really isn't generally ruled by laws. It's ruled by power, whoever has the power. It's ruled usually by dictators, and the law becomes whatever they say and whatever the people who work for them say and whatever the people who are in their good graces say, that becomes the law. It's a very arbitrary thing, a very corrupt thing. The corruption is rampant because nobody is interested, or very few people are interested, in enforcing the laws. They are interested in exercising power. That's what political authority becomes. Not the right, the authority and responsibility to enforce the laws even-handedly for the good of everybody in society, but the political power to gain from my political position, and therefore to favor those who support me and to suppress those who don't, and to line my pockets in the process. That's the way it is in many countries of this world. That's the way it is rapidly becoming in the United States of America. That's what happens when you are not determined to enforce the laws. Well, we're getting all this, I'm far afield, of course, but we're getting all this from Paul's activity in the book of Acts, chapter 16. And he decided to stand up and confront the authorities who had broken the law. They were in a position of authority, but they had abused their authority. They broke the law. They need to be held accountable for the illegal activity which they have performed. They are not the law. They may have position and power, but they are not the law. The law is the law, and they broke the law. And they need to be held accountable for law breaking. And Paul understood that. And he exercised his citizenship rights in order to make that point, in order to bring some accountability to some public officials who had broken the law. Well, we'll have to continue this study, Lord willing, at the same time next week. Please join me then. Until then, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.